Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Hometown Glory, your Spurs and Culture podcast. I'm Charlie and we've got Ash tonight, we've got Billy and we've got Rosa. Tom, unfortunately for us, is on a pretty wet Welsh campsite right now for half term and we wish him well. We miss you, Tom. On this episode, however, we'll be taking in the latest Tottenham Hotspur Stadium thrashing, surveying the ever-changing top four race, looking ahead to Villa on the weekend, chatting about fullbacks scoring amazing goals. We'll be talking about a tough weekend for Spurs women. And of course, we'll be giving out some culture picks. Newcastle, let's talk Newcastle, gang. So it wasn't all that fun for 39 minutes until it was suddenly about as much fun as we've all had in the stadium this season, or potentially for the 3 years it's been open. It's 3 years, by the way, on Sunday that since it had been opened, which I didn't realise. Give me some things you enjoyed, please. Ash, you can start. What did you enjoy about the game?
Just everyone singing the Antonio song for just throughout the second half. It was just, it felt like a carnival kind of atmosphere. It just feels really exciting. And like, we've got the right manager. We'll get into the Champions League bit in a while, but yeah, just the whole vibe. Like, honestly, some of our football like on Sunday was incredible. I think there was a chance that Son missed, which was like one of the moves of the season, which sadly we didn't score. But yeah, just our football, the manager, like everything just feels like amazing right now, and it's like a far cry from Nuno like just a few months ago. So all of it was amazing.
Rosa, we feel like a proper team now, a good team. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, we look incredible. And even without our like first 11, which I keep forgetting, because when I was so furious before the game, when it transpired that Reggie was injured, I just thought, oh my God, I'm so sick of you. Just grow up and stop. I don't even know what he did. Like, did he like stub his toe or something? Do you know what? The problem is I've had COVID all week and I'm very, very unsympathetic to other people's like trials and tribulations. I just don't have time for it. And I was not up for the sort of fullback axis of evil of Doherty on the left and Emerson Royale on the right. But as it turned out, it was completely fine and we didn't need to worry about it. And not only did we not need to worry about it, but I can't believe how good Matt Doherty was on the left when I absolutely thought he'd shrink and it would like undo all the good work that he's been doing in the last few games. So even the fact that wasn't even our like proper first 11, we still looked fantastic. Absolutely. And let me tell you, I needed that victory. I needed that performance. As I've said, I've had COVID. My whole family has been felled by it. It's been 2 years and we've avoided it and it finally got us. And I was like, just please, Tottenham, just don't fuck this up for me. Don't fuck that up for me. And they didn't. And I'm just, I'm so, so, so thrilled. I can't even, do you know what it is as well about that game? It's almost like, you know, you could pick out players who you thought were amazing. So Kane and Romero, Kulusevski, and somebody like Bentancur, I feel like I've completely sort of forgotten about in that performance, which feels unfair because I'm sure he was also magnificent, but it's almost like I didn't notice him.
It's kind of one of the great things about Bentancur, right? Is that he's just sort of slipped into the 11. Billy, I know you had a lot of time for his performance on Sunday.
Yeah, it's just like another outstanding performance. And I think what Rosa said is exactly right. Like, he's so good that you don't notice how good that he is because he's doing everything exactly as he should be doing. He's such a good like link between in the transitions between midfield and attack. And I think a lot of the sort of thing comes down to now being we've got a world-class manager and now the system has become more important than the individual players, which I think we were all worried when we saw, you know, the team being out before kickoff. But I think we've had Conte for so long now and the system is now finally becoming ingrained in the players. It doesn't actually particularly matter that much if our best players are not playing in the system. The system is now sort of overriding the players. And that's because of the way that, you know, Conte plays with these sort of like automatic attacks and these automatic movements and stuff. Like, they're so now ingrained in the players that even if we have a weaker spot like Emerson and Doherty on the left, it didn't really matter because the system is so good. And I think this is probably the performance, probably the best Conte performance that we've seen in that second half. And not just because of like the, obviously we scored 5 goals, but it all came from like Conte style attacking football. And as Ash was saying, that the football in the second half is the best I've seen since like peak Pochettino era. So yeah, absolutely buzzing with it. It was just such an incredible time to be there in the second half. I really, really enjoyed it.
Ash, do we now have to accept that Matt Doherty is just a good footballer who is an important part of a very decent Tottenham Hotspur team?
I think so.
it's kind of mad to say out loud, isn't it?
It's weird. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of almost choked on that. But yeah, it is strange. But I'm really happy for him because he was very, very bad. And yeah, he sort of never gave up. And yeah, like, I think so many of the players, especially at the start of this season, were well below the required level. And like, you can include like Kane and Son in that. And I think like they all look very fit now. They're all, like Billy said, playing in like this system. And I guess this formation obviously suits like him especially. So yeah, I think like it's great to have like these attacking fullbacks who are scoring consistently, and that just like really bodes well for like the running. And yeah, like Doherty like really showed up on Sunday, and I thought Emerson was very poor for the first half an hour and then was solid. So yeah, it's all good.
Solid enough that you got to drop, of course, one of Billy's highlights after every Spurs game now, one of sort of soon-to-be Oscar-nominated Emerson Royale highlights vids. What was this one like, Billy?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of, obviously, like the last few games, it's been like a little bit of a joke that he's had these highlights video after having like 7 touches on the ball. But now when he actually scored, like, everyone's like, what's actually going to happen? Now he's actually got some things to highlight. And it did not disappoint, man. The editing in this video is like sick. It's so good. Like the transitions that he comes out with, it's like a little music video. But my favorite bit of it is the Son move that Ash was talking about earlier, at the very beginning of it, like Emerson like backheels it to Kane. He's like such a bit part in it. But that whole move takes up like half the video. He replays the whole thing as if Emerson was the one that put the ball over to Son. It's like the main feature of the video, that and the goal. It's like he literally just like slightly touches it to Kane and then they play the whole move. It's so good. But yeah, the actual goal, and then I think what I assume is his family celebrating, you know, it was really cool. It like did not disappoint for sure. And it's just like becoming a regular highlight of the week, like the Emerson video drop along with the Conte cam, which I know we all loved as well.
Yeah, and don't worry, everyone listening. Billy will be supplying his review of Royale's highlights package every single episode on Hometown Glory. So do stay tuned for that every week. I go back to Matt Doherty for a sec. I'm really thrilled for him too. I think I was both reading an interview and then sort of watched some of the post-match stuff as well. And can't remember which paper he gave an interview to before the match, but maybe it was The Guardian. He was talking about his sort of lowest moment, where he was sort of, I think it was after that Arsenal derby under Mourinho at the Emirates, where he and Bale were sort of on the left and, sorry, on the right-hand side, and both got sort of torn apart. And he was left out of the Zagreb game, I think it was. I think it was that fixture. And he sort of spoke about, basically, Mourinho made a bit of an example of him. And during sort of peak COVID, as it was then, he had to like stay on the coach, and he was the only player that was there that wasn't named on the bench. So he just had to like sit on the coach for ages by himself until he was allowed in the stadium. And he said there was a moment where he had international duty after that match, and he considered for about half an hour while sat on this coach, shall I just take myself off to the airport and, you know, fuck this, basically, like, this is my Spurs career over. I don't care what happens. I'm just going to go off and check in with Ireland early. And obviously he didn't. And yeah, he's now this incredibly important part of the team. And I also wonder if him becoming best mates with Harry Kane is really helping him. I feel like those two, they're like golf buddies, and they're like really, really tight apparently. And the fact that they seem to be developing this chemistry on the pitch and finding each other and assisting each other, and they're always like celebrating very intimately with each other, and I wonder if that's actually quite helped him as well. That's our 20 minute segment on Matt Doherty. We should probably move on. I'm going to move on to Christian Romero, because I think that was his best game in a Spurs shirt. The guy's an absolute maniac, and I can't believe he plays for Tottenham, and I feel like one of us says that every week, but Rosa, he was just extraordinary, wasn't he?
Yeah, what a man. I think our favourite, we all have the same favourite moment, right, where he just like basically knocks Sam Maximum over and just kind of walks away, like, you're nothing to me. It's incredible. But he was everywhere. And it's also, so it's the system that Billy was talking about. But I think the other thing that Conte gives to the team is that confidence. And Ash, you spoke about it in our group, where you were, now is it the, whether it was the third or the fourth or fifth goal, I can't really remember, but you were like, this is why you stay calm and play out from the back. And I'm like, sure, you can say that, like, once that moment, that terrifying moment's passed, but you are right. And having a coach who gives you that confidence, but also having those players, because I've been watching, so I watched Match of the Day, and then I watched the highlights that went up on the Spurs website, and also, you know, the little compilation of his best moments. And it is just that calmness on the ball. So he does seem sort of slightly crazy, and I can't believe that we will get out of this season without him being sent off. And hopefully that's just not going to happen in the North London derby. But so there is that sort of like wildness to him, but it is that calmness and that confidence. And I think you can just see everyone else kind of taking their cues from him. And there's just nothing like that. And we've been quite blessed at Spurs of having very classy defenders, but it doesn't always translate into a calmness across the defense. And I think that's something that he really, really gives us. He's just unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, we're all in love with him, and rightly so.
Yeah. And I think, speaking of that sort of aggression that he has, like, his sort of positional sense is absolutely like crazy. Like, I know obviously he does all the, like, it's not a problem because of the way that he defends so well in the first place, but the amount, so I sit in the south stand, I sit right behind the goal, the amount of times I look up and literally see like Romero like 5 foot away from me. So I'm like, mate, you're literally a defender, what are you doing attacking this close to the goal? And the amount of times you see Conte like going wild at him on the touchline, just like shouting at Romero to get back. I just love the amount of times that he's like in the box randomly. I just love that about him. But and like, it would be a problem if he wasn't so incredibly good at defending anyway. He's just an absolute nutter, really, isn't he? Let's be honest. He's just absolute, like, such a crazy, wild character. But I thought the way that he, because I think before the game, we were all worried about how Royale would deal with Saint-Maximin, but then it kind of transpired that it was just going to be Romero on him all game. And coming off the back of that performance against Antonio, and that's two games in a row now where he's like snuffed out the most dangerous player on the pitch without even having any kind of problem back. It's just, you know, it's two from two against Antonio and Saint-Maximin, which, you know, for a defender, it doesn't happen to us. We don't have defenders that are that good all the time. It's amazing, really.
It's I feel like he almost now seems to pick which attacker he's going to like make an example of, and you know, sort of like make mincemeat of by just crushing their dreams. And it feels like it was obviously Antonio, West Ham, St. Maximin, Newcastle. Hopefully, I'm thinking like Coutinho, because well, Coutinho is too small. That would be a bit unfair. Who's he going to be for Villa? Maybe like
Watkins.
Yeah, I guess it would be Watkins, wouldn't it? I mean, only Watkins seems like a nice man that doesn't deserve a Christian Romero sort of special, but he's probably their most dangerous
doesn't
player.
Matter.
So yeah, he's got to
doesn't
be crushed.
Matter, yeah, no pity, no pity. But they both do that though, don't they? Romero and Bentancur, they both take that sort of responsibility and they kind of see where the danger is on the other side, and they say, right, I'm going to walk straight for that and take it out.
And yeah, they're both that lovely combination of like calm on the ball, quality on the ball, but they're also like pretty filthy as well. And I think having that kind of meanness through the team now that we just haven't had, I just think is massive for us.
Yeah, we also need to keep an eye on Romero, because I think he's one or two yellow cards away from missing a game. I may have got that wrong, but I think it's pretty close to that, like the cutoff point.
I think if I'm right, so he's two yellow cards away from it, but he resets in like 3 games time. So I think we're just on the edge basically. So if he gets booked in the next 2 games, and I think it's because it's 10 bookings. I think I'm right in this, I'm not 100%. I think he misses 2 games as well, which would be a disaster, but he now would have to get booked in both. I think it's 2 consecutive games now for that to happen. I think it resets really, really soon. So hopefully we'll be all right now. But I know that was a real worry back in like 4 or 5 games ago. He was like 2 yellow cards away from getting a 2-match ban. But now I think he's gone like 3 games now without getting a yellow card. So I think should be all right, hopefully.
God knows how, but yeah.
Yeah. Here we are. I think it was like crazy, wasn't it? He got like something like 8 yellow cards in his first 13 Premier League games or something like that. It was that ridiculous, but now he seems to have gone like 3 or 4 without now, which is decent.
I feel like I'd sort of, well, who knows if Villa will be tough or not, we'll go on to that, but yeah, an away game seems to pick up most of his bookings, I think, so it'd be a challenge for him on Saturday. We've gone like maybe 15, nearly 20 minutes without talking about Harry Kane pretty much once. I feel like this is sort of becoming a bit of a trend on this podcast that we sort of compliment every single other player. I mean, he was absolutely, I mean, first half he was quite quiet, but the whole team were, but second half just absolutely like exquisite, just one of the most sensational performances I can remember seeing from a forward, especially one that didn't even manage to score, which seems ridiculous. Billy, he was just magnificent, wasn't he?
Yeah, and do you know what? If you imagine that scenario, like you see us score five goals and Harry Kane doesn't score any of them, you're thinking Kane must have had a terrible game. But he's probably, you know, I know Carragher gave him man of the match at Sky. And like, I think the level that he's playing at the moment, especially in 2022 in particular, I think he's by some distance the best player in the league at the moment on current form. Because sort of Salah's sort of going through a little bit of a quiet patch at the moment. I think he's almost like carrying us to the top four. And I know we're going to come on to talk about this later, but if we are serious about actually doing it as a team, then Kane's going to have to sort of drag us there at times, because that's what we've always wanted from Kane. Like, he is our best player. He's probably, you could argue, the best player in the league on current form, one of the best players in the world. Like, we need him to drag us like he is at the moment. And since the beginning of 2022 in particular, if you think about like the Man City game and all these big performances that he's dropping, I just think he's the best player in the league at the moment. And it's just the things that he's doing, it's just like you can't imagine any other player doing that. So you can imagine like Kevin De Bruyne putting in some of those passes, but then you add like 5 or 6 goals in his last 6-7 Premier League games on top of that as well. It's just insane what he's doing, both creatively and like scoring wise. It's just, yeah, I think he's by far the best player in the league at the moment, and it's really, really helping us.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing to watch. I was watching Match of the Day and they were quite critical of Newcastle, particularly in the second half, of like no one picking up Kane, basically, and just kind of losing track of him. And it's easy to say that from the sort of defender's perspective, right? You say, oh, you should have been following him. You should be picking him up. He's gone there. But that's the point about a player like Kane, right? You can't, like, you think you're on him and then you've lost him. And that is what the best players in the world can do is you think you've been following them all game and then all of a sudden they will pop up. You just like shut your eyes for a second, you've lost them. And it's just a glorious thing to watch. It's been such an interesting season in that way, because we were talking towards the end of the year, right? Kane needs to step up. He's here now. He's going to be here for the rest of the season. And now he just needs to start getting some goals. And he's got that, but he's just turned into just like the metamorphosis has been unbelievable, really. Even for us who've been watching him for the last couple of years and have been seeing this transformation, right? I don't think really any of us saw this kind of level of creativity coming, right?
Yeah, and I think if you look at like Kane's history, you had like the Pochettino version of Kane, which was like he was like a pressing machine and like getting on the end of chances, scoring, you know, goals every game. Then you had the Mourinho version, which was like dropping deeper and being creative. And like, I think what Conte's done, he sort of like mixed the two together to make probably the best version of Kane we've ever seen. Like, he's still dropping deep, but his fitness is as good as it was in like peak Pochettino era, because, you know, that's what Conte does to his players, to his fitness regimes. And I think we're sort of seeing the sort of amalgamation of both the Pochettino Kane and the Mourinho Kane. And the Conte Kane, I would say, is probably the best version that we've seen of him at the moment. It's an insane level.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think to Rose's point about sort of switching off and giving him room, that was like, for me, the best moment of the match, even though it wasn't a goal, was them giving him a tiny bit of space. He dropped off and like played this incredible like pass on the volley, which like set Kulusevski off. And like no other player, maybe De Bruyne perhaps, could like play that pass. And yeah, I know we're going to get onto it in a sec, but that kind of gives you confidence that like top four can happen, because he's playing at like an unbelievable level that like we haven't seen before, and we've watched him for years now. So it's really exciting. And like, yeah, I don't want to take him for granted. I know we should probably speak about him at the top of every podcast.
Yeah, and I think just going by how crazy this performance was, like, I think what Ash was just saying there is like the first time we mentioned Kulusevski as well, who's also just brilliant. Like, again, like just the level of like performance from our team at the moment that Conte is getting out of them is just like, you know, I think every single person played really, really well at the weekend. Other than maybe you could argue Hugo Lloris, who had a pretty poor game, not just with the actual goal, but with his kicking again, but it's under pressure a little bit. But like, honestly, like again, it's just another really good performance from Kulusevski as well, who I think the assist with his right foot as well, which is, you know, something really good to see, because I know a little bit of the criticism has been he's a bit like one-footed.
And also, I think it's how one-footed that he might be that people seem to sort of zero in on. Plus, obviously, that he's not the quickest. But I thought the assist for Sonny's goal, the third one, where sort of Kane set Kulusevski away, he took one touch with his left and then played Son in with his right. He actually showed a pretty decent turn of pace to sort of zoom down the wing to get that kind of yard of space to play the cross. I love how he doesn't, like, he doesn't demand the ball constantly, Kulusevski. Like, he's not one of those players that sort of goes hunting for the ball, or, you know, he's not a Lucas, say, where he's just always kind of like, right, I'm just attracted to where the ball is and I'm going to just buzz around and annoy people until they give me it or whatever. He just is very disciplined in how he keeps his shape. He allows the team to have that whip. But when he does get the ball, he's so decisive, and everything he does seems sort of purposeful, and he knows what he's doing, and it's for the sort of greater good. Like, he doesn't do anything that's sort of selfish or anything, which I suppose the fact he's got 5 assists since he arrived sort of speaks to. I just love him. And, you know, obviously he's going to be compared to Luis Diaz for the rest of his time in England, I imagine. And, you know, he's obviously a very, very good player that Liverpool have. And I'm sure every Spurs fan would have loved to have signed him. But I think in terms of Kulusevski being left-footed, being able to play on the right, cutting in the way that he does, giving the team that balance, I would sign him over Diaz any day of the week now. Like, I know that sounds maybe a bit bonkers, but I just think he is so perfect for this Conte team. I love him. I also love Sonny, which, of course, everyone knows how much I love Sonny. And we haven't mentioned him yet. And again, not like an impeccable performance. We've mentioned him missing that sensational Kane pass to, you know, maybe round off a sort of goal of the season contender. But, you know, I feel like with Sonny, you're some we're all sometimes at risk of sort of nitpicking someone who, you know, he's second leading goal scorer in the Premier League. He's like scored 9 goals in 9 home games now. He's, you know, there just aren't many players in the division, let alone within the club, that score and assist at the same ratio he does. So I just feel like him and Kane sort of cresting perhaps at the same time, ably assisted now by Kulusevski. I just feel like it's all coming together. I really, really do. I suppose the only downside, which I'll come on to in a second, because Rosa's going to keep good times going for a bit longer. Go on, Rosa.
Yeah, I am, because I do just, want to pick up on that about that front three, and like particularly Kane, but also the other two, is that, you know, obviously it's great to be thinking about top four and to have it all come together. But I think just watching them play right now, it's really important. It's such a good reminder of why we love this game, because like the skill and the vision and the creativity and just the sheer joy that we get from watching them, it's just like nothing else, isn't it? And I think just like this is a moment to just really stop and think, okay,
absolutely.
Right, we want to end in top four. Like, we want to finish the season in top four, absolutely. But this little run of home games has just been so wonderful. Like, and I've obviously not been there for any of them, so.
And it makes you feel like, you know, surely, I think, you know, the two most important figures going into the summer, I guess, are Conte and Kane. You know, we all know that. Surely, if you're Conte, I know that he could leave, you know, he could leave like the night before the season if he had some row. The night before the season started, if he has a row with Levy over something or other, if he's that sort of guy. However, he must be seeing what is happening now and thinking to himself, you know, with a few little tweaks in the summer, if I can convince Kane to stay, even if they don't get top four, and obviously we all pray to God that we do, that is a good football team now that is actually understood what that man wants out of them, that has got the system down. And, you know, we all thought we were going to have to sort of melt all these wingbacks down for glue in the summer. And he's even turned these guys into, like, you know, assisting, goal scoring, you know, functional human beings. It's yeah, you just hope that there's something there. I mean, I feel like we're running the risk. I say risks, it's a lot of fun, of just going through the entire 11 and complimenting everyone. Any downsides? I suppose we conceded another goal from a set piece, a sort of silly one to give away by Son, and then Hugo, whilst a bit maybe blindsided by a not terrific wall, just sort of punched it in his own net, which I don't think was obviously very good. Didn't concede from a corner though, so that's something. Is anyone worried by the goals that we are conceding at the moment? Or
no,
are we getting a bit better, Ash? No?
I'm really chill about it. I mean, like, not to be all happy clappy, but I think like even the response to their goal was really impressive, because we just went straight at the other end and equalized. And like that really reminded me of when we're sort of going for top 4 years ago, and like that would happen, and like the crowd would get behind the team and we'd like basically like respond with a goal. So we're going to concede some goals. Nothing's ever going to be perfect, but I think the response was like really encouraging. So,
and I hope it's encouraging for the run-in as well, because I feel like there was a palpable sort of freak out when Newcastle did score, but the team just were like, nah, we're not fussed. We're just going to go and equalise now. And I thought Sonny particularly was just, I mean, he literally got the ball and was like, I gave this free kick away, I'm going to make this right. And like ran almost the length of the pitch to win the corner, didn't he? From which we scored the goal. And I think, I hope as a fan base, we can see now that this team is resilient and can concede a goal and not freak out and just get on with it. And therefore we don't have to freak out if, you know, the team aren't just going to crumble. Because we've got what, 3 home games left, and they're all going to be absolutely massive, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I do find it quite maddening, but at the same time, just because it just feels inevitable, we like give away like a silly free kick, and then that just it just feels like the chance to concede is just that much higher than for any other team. So, but at the same time, you know, the team that Conte's managed to fashion, you know, no team is going to be perfect. And what we've been given is so good. I'm not really, like, I am bothered, but I'm not that bothered. I can't be, I don't want to get into sort of a fuss about it, really. It's irritating, but it's also, you know, I've watched Spurs do that for so many years, and a lot of that time we haven't played football anywhere near as good as I'm watching now. So I will take it.
Good. I think we're all the same boat.
And I think as well, like, the amount of goals that we're scoring at the moment, I think we scored 13 goals in our last three home games. And I think we scored the most Premier League goals in 2022. Like, I'm not really that worried about defence. Like, it's not like we look shaky like we have done in the past under, like, Newley, for example. We don't look like, you know, we never really look like we're, like really wobbling at the back. We tend into control games and, like, dominate attacking in an attacking sense. So that's not really an issue for me, I don't think. I think at the moment we look like we're going to outscore pretty much every team that we come against. So, yeah, I'm not really too worried about it.
One of the reasons we're looking like we're going to outscore everyone at the moment is because we're getting goals from everywhere, which led us to ask our very wonderful Twitter followers the following question, which was, bearing in mind that we're now seeing goals from the likes of Gentle Ben Davies, Matt Doherty, and even Emerson Royale, we wanted to know, what is your favourite goal scored by a Spurs fullback? It doesn't have to be the best goal, your favourite goal. Going to take it over to our Twitter correspondent, Billy T. Billy, I don't know if we've ever had as many responses to one of our ridiculously niche questions as we have this one.
Yeah, man, it's been quite, like, we've had an insane amount of responses. It's been, like, overwhelmingly so, but I think
says that, because, you know, then that means something.
And there's a lot of, like, repeated answers here, but I'll just go through some of them now. So a lot of people obviously mentioned Danny Rose, which is maybe slightly controversial for the reason I'll say in a second, but someone says, any other answer than Danny Rose just playing wrong? That's from AD Bryan. Friend of the show and family member of the show, Ollie, says, I'm very surprised he's gone for something confrontational here, knowing Ollie. He says, all the boring people will say Rose and Walker versus Arsenal, Carr versus United, and BAE versus Liverpool, but the streets only remember Timothy Otuba against Newcastle. Again, it's another one that comes up quite a lot. Chris says, Edmund slightly ahead of Danny Rose versus Woolwich. Lily White Rose says, Danny Rose versus Arsenal, the roof came off the lane and Sol Campbell came back and took the L. Only one answer to this. Yes, that's right, says Jordan. The Emerson one at the weekend. What technique? That must, I assume, is Emerson's video editor sending that one in. We've got Jason Lee saying Christian Ziga, the free kick. Holly says Rose versus Arsenal. I had quite a lot of shouts for Stephen Carr versus United, which I do have quite a good memory of when I was a kid. Andy Perry says that was the peak of his career. And Tony Spumoni says Stephen Carr, my lord, against United as well. Nick Butcher says Carr's chip on the final day of the season versus Sunderland, which I have no memory of. But, you know, who doesn't love a chip goal? Johnny, another shout for Timothy Otuba against Newcastle. First time he won there in years. Mark says Edmund. Lucas, with a bit of a niche shout, says Power Tremors Army by far. I don't know which goal he's referring to there, but I assume it must have been
a good one. He's having a joke. Paolo Tremors Army did not score a goal for Tottenham Hotspur.
There you go. So he didn't even score one. Brian says, again, he's just sent a video of the Otuba goal. It's actually such a banging goal. It's a great finish. Sort of cuts inside, like, on his right foot and, like, curls in. Great goal. Just going through some more here. Ryan Goldier says Trippier versus Tottenham, that famous own goal against Chelsea, which was absolutely horrific. Tweaker Max says Rose versus Chelsea, probably nowhere near the best goal on the list, but I'm leaving his body on the line to score. It made me love him.
In the
5-3, I'm guessing, yeah. And Can You Hear the Drum says, as a Swede, you can't beat Eric Edmund's absolute banger, which is one of the best, one of the all-time great goals from distance in the Premier League, I would say.
Surely some people must have said Paul Stalteri against West Ham.
Of course. We've got quite a few of them coming up. Here we go. I'll read one now from Shrewsbury Spurs saying, Stalteri against West Ham. I'm not sure the Rose one... so this is what I was going to come on to. I'm not sure the Rose one technically counts, as he did play left wing in that game. That conversion happened later, which is, I guess,
it's a very good point. Yeah,
it's a very good point. David says, poor Canadian bacon Stalteri against West Ham. No, I don't care that no one else calls him that nickname. Canadian bacon. Big fan of Edmund at Anfield, says Dave Scott. Walker winner versus Arsenal. Benoit versus Liverpool. We'll probably have to go with Danny's debut goal versus Arsenal.
Got some Walker more against Arsenal is underrated, yeah. Yeah. The sort of and also, long ranger that Chesney completely lost track of.
Also gave birth to a chant as well, doesn't it? Like the Proclaimers chant again for Kyle Walker, which was mentioned in the chant as well. That was a great goal. This one, which I can only assume is Rose's burner account, says, seems everyone already forgot it, but Davis versus Stoke last season is my low-key favourite. So there you go, Rosa, on the burner account there.
Do you know what? Ben,
whoever Ben's that person other, is, they are not wrong. They are not
Ben's
wrong.
He scored another great goal. Do you remember we were away at Swansea once with that really amazing team yes. goal that he finished off? Yeah, only scores bangers, does Ben.
Only bangers. And speaking of burner accounts, I assume this could be Charlie. So not the best quality goal, but one of my favourites was Vertonghen versus Dortmund, which was a fantastic goal, followed by the Superman celebration, which was a great shout because it's one of his few games at left back as well for us. That was a really good mm-hmm. shout. Reto Ziegler from 2 yards, more shouts for Stephen Carr, loads of shouts for Stolteri as well. Yeah, so loads and loads of fullback goals. Yeah, we've got some real bangers from fullback positions, but sort of the ones that keep coming up are Edmund, Rose and Stolteri, I'd say the most.
Thank you, Billy, for that was a tough job because that was literally the tip of the iceberg in terms of replies. And you read out about 960. So thank you for tirelessly going through that.
I Ash, really Rosa, love that any... Rose one Which against one? Chelsea, actually. The Chelsea one, I'd forgotten about that. But that is honestly, that's like the quintessential Danny Rose moment, I think, where it's just like full commitment. He's like body on the line, was like being just taken out, I think, because he scored, right? Yeah. I can't co-sign any Stephen Carr goals though, because just like the original snake, no thank you, no.
Still not forgiven him. Do you know what? I have forgiven Stephen Carr.
I don't forget.
I'll tell you why I forgave him, because he captained that Birmingham team that beat Arsenal in the League Cup final. And that was one of my greatest non-Spurs football days of my life, watching that Birmingham upset of Arsenal in that final. Magnificent. Ash, any standouts for you? Fullback goals?
I was going with Ollie on the Atiba one. That was the first one that sprung to mind.
You're a big Atiba guy, aren't you, actually? I forget.
Yeah. Along with my cousin. So I have to shout out my cousin, Anna Atiba. Huge goal.
Billy, what's your favourite?
I'm just thinking back to like the Danny Rose point, like, was Bale left back when he scored that goal against Stoke? And that's why I'm not sure if he was sort of had a quite a long period in the team as left back. I'm not sure how many of his like ridiculous goals were in that period off when he transitioned to like a left winger. But if he was playing left back then that would be up there as well. That was an incredible goal.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that actually, because, well, I guess he was at left back definitely when we played Inter.
I don't think I'm not sure. No? I feel like he might have been left wing by then.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
I think he probably scored a free kick, though, early doors as a left back.
He scored one against Arsenal.
Yeah.
In a defeat, yeah. Scored a brace against Fulham in one of his early games for Spurs. When he was... It was weird with Bale, wasn't it? Because he was really good when he arrived, despite being like 12 or whatever. And then he got a really bad injury and came back. And that's when that ridiculous sort
that
of curse
run
thing
of games, yeah
began. And then I don't know if he actually ever like came back and they bothered playing him at left back again. I feel like he was then, I don't know, I'd need to go through and probably have a chat with Harry Redknapp or something. See how it all went down. My picks would have been Danny Rose and also a goal that a guy that I didn't realise Rosa really, really hates, Mauricio Tirico.
I'm so shocked that you love him, like genuinely. I was scrolling through Twitter and I was like, hang on a second.
I mean, I feel abysmal. To go to sort of tie it back to our sort of Spurs 7 questions that we ask everyone, he'd be one of my like favourite terrible players, I think, in the sense that back then, like, and I'm sort of tried to make this point in vain, I think, because Rosa wasn't having it, but like, most of our players were bad. So it was like slim pickings to actually like find a good one. So at least with him, I was like, he's got terrific hair, which I know Billy agrees with me on. He did that cool thing with like the shin pads and the socks, you know, sort of like roll your socks around your shin pads. great name from Argentina. Like, I liked a lot about him. Obviously, he wasn't very good, but I was at that Leeds game that he scored an absolute like thunder bastard of a finish from distance, and that was it for me. I was sold from there.
Do you know what it is? I'm obviously like mortally offended by terrible Argentinian players.
Right, that was a lot of fun. I always enjoy asking everyone for their niche Spurs opinions on Twitter, and you guys never disappoint. Speaking of disappointments, if you support the wrong side of North London, they humiliated themselves against Crystal Palace, which the only downside to that result was that it ensures that not one of the five of us will have a successful set of predictions from our last episode. The closest we got was a very brave Rosa and a very brave Billy predicting a draw for Arsenal going to Selhurst Park. Me, Tom and Ash all thought Arsenal would win. I mean, I feel like, Billy, you were fairly convinced that Arsenal were going to struggle. You know, it wasn't bravado. You were like pretty sold on the idea that Palace would give them a good game.
Yeah, I think like I'm listening to like TalkSport today, actually, and they're talking about Palace have got a really good record against the big sides. They beat us. They haven't lost to Man City all season. They haven't lost to Arsenal in all season now, because I think they drew them. If you remember, I think Arsenal just nick a late and equaliser against them. They nearly beat Arsenal away. They've had some good, I think they've had three clean sheets on the bounce coming into that game. So I think they're a really, really well set up team. I was a bit worried when I saw that Alisse was not playing, because I think he's probably their best player of the season. But they've just got so many good young players like Gallagher. They've got the young English defenders as well that have been playing really, really well. Eze was on the bench. I'm really a big fan of Eze, so he was on the bench. But Zaha came back, which, again, I think people were worried about after the international break. But, yeah, I think they're just a really well set up side. And I think they can cause problems for anyone. And I think the sort of defensive steel that they've got, like when they kept clean sheet against Man City a couple of weeks ago, I just thought it was a bad time to be playing them. And to be honest, I think like it's the first time we've put Arsenal under pressure all season. First time we've gone above them. I think I'm right. First time we've gone into the top four since Conte's been here. I think that's true.
Yeah, since September, I think.
September. And it's like they've crumbled at the very first sight of any kind of pressure. And it's by no means overall, by no means means that we've won the top four or anything like that. But it's just a really good indicator that if we keep putting pressure on them, they do have a lot of weaknesses, and they might continue to crack like that. So I think the early signs in this sort of end of the season run are really good for us. We just got to keep maintaining and doing our thing, I think.
I think what was really important was that they played so poorly. They just were like, Palace were really up for it, and Arsenal just didn't look up for it at all, which I found quite surprising, to be honest. I thought, I don't know if they just thought that like Vieira would do them a favour or something. Like I did put the draw down as a bit of a, Ollie sort of talked me into it, because he said, you know, they have played really well against the top sides. But, and I, to kind of counterbalance that, I was like, but Arsenal have just been beating everyone below them. So I thought, okay, I'll go for a draw. And then there was that slight worry because Palace have their cup semi-final coming up, but that's not for another couple of weeks. So I think I was slightly calmer before that. Just kind of realizing they had a bit more time than I thought they did. But I think it was just the sort of manner of defeat, really. They just didn't seem up for it. And given that we had already gone above them, that is a terrible, terrible sign for them. And listen, we don't know, like this could all look completely different this time next week, right? But as things stand, I'm gonna just enjoy this moment, frankly.
Yeah. Billy, do you feel like, I mean, not that Aubameyang was necessarily scoring loads of goals, but we have, you know, the two most sort of prolific forwards in the league at the moment. And I feel like with Arsenal, and I think Carragher, watching back some of the footage from the Sky game of us on the weekend, he made the point that Spurs have players that can sort of win you games by themselves. And I think we've made similar points on this podcast. Whereas with Arsenal, it feels like the whole team, maybe they work better as a team, which I don't even know is true at this point of the season anymore anyway. But it feels to me a bit like the whole Arsenal machine has to be running smoothly for sort of any goals really to arrive. because they don't have that sort of standout striker that's just going to score from nothing. Is that maybe going to be the difference, do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I remember saying at the time, in January, it looked like they sold themselves short. Like they've sold Aubameyang, which even if you don't consider the form that he was in, you're getting rid of a striker from the first, from the squad anyway, and they didn't replace him with anybody. They sent out a load of players on loan, and they've just left themselves with like Lacazette up front. I think he's got 4 league goals this season, I think. It's way less than 10 anyway, however many it is. And it just seems like really, really short. Like they're sort of relying on goals from Saka, who is, he is a very good player and he is chipping in with a lot of goals. But if that isn't working, then Lacazette is nowhere near a prolific enough striker to carry them into the top four. So unless they are getting goals from Martinelli and Saka, which, in a lot of their games this year is what has sort of won them those games. But I don't really see it in Lacazette at all. I don't think he's prolific enough to carry them to top four in the same way that you could say, that Kane is for us. And even like, if you look at the teams around like West Ham and Man United, West Ham have got Jared Bowen, who's scoring like pretty much a goal a game at the moment in the Premier League. And Man United have just got like a ridiculous amount of firepower up front as well. Whether they're performing or not, they've got the players out that can score goals all the time. If you look at Arsenal's attack, none of them are particularly prolific. And it's only really Saka that you would say at the moment is in like the best form that he could be in out of their current attacking options. So I said at the time, I think they've sold themselves short on the goal front. And it's starting to look that way. And I can see their fans getting really frustrated with Lacazette. And it's made even better by the fact that Aubameyang is now scoring a lot of goals for Barcelona as well, which is just beautiful to see, to be honest.
Ash, is it kind of, has our result and their result turned it on its head for you, do you think?
I've always thought we could do it, but that it would go to the wire. And I think that will still happen. I think we said last week or the week before that, like Arsenal and their young team, and we're the experienced team. And I think like that's starting to like show. And I think they're going to come under a lot of pressure. And I'm intrigued to see how they respond. Last night being like the first test, and they like obviously like failed miserably. I checked the fixtures earlier, and I think we have like 4 games before them, and they have like a couple like before us. And I think the order of the games is like going to be really important in the run-in. Like we saw that in like the season when we were chasing Leicester or chasing Chelsea. So I think us sort of like having a few fixtures before them is going to like really pile on the pressure. And I really hate them. And if we do it, like that All or Nothing documentary is going to be incredible. I will watch that back to back for weeks. So I'm just praying we do it. I think we're going to do it. I really do.
I love Confident Ash as my
It's the best.
I'm gonna believe. Honestly, guys, if we do it, like we deserve this, man. We deserve it, don't we? Do you know what? All of their bullshit for their like banter periods, they don't know. They have not suffered.
I feel like we deserve it in the sense that obviously we've finished above them for a bunch of seasons now, and we had all those Champions League seasons when they weren't in it, but there wasn't really a season, and I think this is probably good for our collective sort of cardiac health retrospectively, that it didn't happen that way, but we didn't really have a season where we did to them what they used to do to us, which was just like nick it from us, and it was like a point in it. I guess there was the last Poch, sort of that the Champions League final season, we just got in front of them then, but that was like two sort of like drunk men falling over and who could like fall over the fastest. It was such terrible teams that didn't really seem like it almost counted. And we had the Champions League final as well going on and whatever. But to do it like this, where we've caught them up and, AVB moment, and I feel like there are parallels between Arteta and AVB at times as well.
Same.
For him to...
Yeah,
don't you dare. You take that back right now.
But I also think what was quite funny, sort of like listening to the Arsenal fans like 48 hours ago, was that they were convinced that third was a lock and that they were after Chelsea and that like they didn't need to worry about Spurs. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting.
I think the way that Arsenal fans talk on Twitter, you'd have to believe that this is like some kind of underdog story. But if they don't finish in the top four, they should feel ashamed of themselves because they spent the most in Europe in summer. They backed their manager with huge amounts of money. And if they don't get in the top four, if they finish below a team that was managed by Nuno for a third of the season, then they should feel absolutely ashamed of themselves, to be honest. So if it does happen, not saying that it will happen, but if it does happen, then they need to hold some serious shame, because that is an absolute embarrassment. The amount of money that they spent and the amount of time that they spent above us in the league this season, if they don't do it, then my God. My God.
And let's not forget as well, we're talking about an Arsenal team that literally ran away crying from the scene of a North London derby and behaved so poorly that the Premier League were forced to change the rules to ensure that no team could work the system to get a cancellation like they did ahead of the North London derby. And also, let's not forget, that was a North London derby where, granted, they had a bunch of people out. However, that was before we'd signed Bentancur, before we'd signed Kulusevski. Eric Dier wasn't fit at that point. Romero wasn't fit at that point. Sonny wasn't fit at that point. You know, you're talking about a Spurs team with Sanchez and, sorry, Ashley, who else wasn't?
Skip wasn't fit either.
No, yeah, we had a team of bums and they were running away from N17 from that. So please, football gods, we're obviously massively biased, but we deserve it and they don't, because that's just how it has to be, I'm afraid. And I think we're going to do it. I do think we're going to do it. It moves us on to Villa on the weekend, which, I mean, every single fixture now feels seismic and enormous and terrifying. Villa, I was looking up to see how they're doing. Weird, weird team, Aston Villa. So they're 11th in the league. Their last six, so starting with the one furthest back, they beat Brighton 2-0 away, but everyone beats Brighton at the moment. They beat Southampton 4-0 at home. Good result. Then they lost 3-0 away at Leeds. They lost to West Ham away 2-1. Then they lost to Arsenal 1-0 in that really feeble performance they put in just before the international break. And then they lost 2-1 at Wolves. So they've lost their last four. I think that we're going to be absolutely fine in this one, because I think Gerrard is arrogant enough to and desperate enough to really want a sort of big team feather in his cap, and is going to come out and try and attack us. And I think we're just going to pick them off quite easily. And I don't actually think they're playing that well, despite, and I looked this up as well, they've got no injuries, no suspensions. They've got an entirely full squad to pick from. But I mean, Ash, I know you can't stand Gerrard and think he's a massive fraud. So this is kind of bearing you out.
I was actually going to call you out because you predicted a draw.
That was despite before.
Not giving it the big one. Yeah.
Very fair. It's important that people do call me out on my bullshit. That was before Newcastle, and I'm a true believer.
I also predicted a draw, so I can't speak, but I'm just saying.
Was anyone confident then and now? Billy, you said we're going to win every game apart from Liverpool, so you must be pretty chill.
Yeah, and that was before the Newcastle game as well, so I still do believe that. But, you know, it's one of those things, because I kind of had this, image in my head that Aston Villa are a pretty decent team. They seem to have given a couple of results where Coutinho scored a couple of goals. And then I watched them play Arsenal, hoping they're going to do something. And they were just absolutely terrible. Really bad in that game. Just really, really poor. So I think, hopefully, it shouldn't really be a problem for us. And I just think we've got so much momentum at the moment that we're just going to have to carry ourselves and win this game, even if it's 1-0 or whatever. Just going to have to do it. And I think the form that we're in, it shouldn't really be a problem for us at the moment. So, yeah, no, I think we'll win it.
Okay, that's 2-2. I mean, I should be quiet now. I clearly have no idea what I'm talking about. And also, anytime I do predict a big win, it goes horribly wrong. So I really should be quiet. Rosa, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I can't remember at all what I predicted. It's all a
can tell you.
I haven't paid really much attention to Villa this season. I remember we all were obviously this was two different managers ago for them and us. But when they came to the Lane, that was my first game back there for years. And I remember everyone was they'd had a couple of really good performances, and everyone was quite freaked out because we were so bad. And they seemed to be on a good run, and everybody thought we could potentially even just get turned over. And they were really, really, really poor. So obviously think quite a lot has changed, but a lot has changed for them, but so much has changed for us. So, you know, it kind of, I don't know what my prediction is, but ultimately, like, we have to do it. Look, if they want it, they've got to do it, basically. There you go. That's my team talk. Just, I would simply.
you predicted a win. Ash, you
did
predicted.
There you go. Like, go.
Ash, like you rightly called me out on, you also called out a draw. However, you weren't giving it the big one like me. Have you changed your mind, or do you still feel like it might be a tough one for us?
I'll stick with my prediction.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, but I do think we're going to get top four, but I'll stick with my prediction on this one.
Okay, why do you think Villa might cause us enough problems to get something from us?
I feel like Coutinho always does well against us.
Yeah, that's true.
So that just like worries me, and just the general like Spurs vibe of like really needing a big result in an important game, and like then sort of like not really showing up. So that, for that reason, like this game feels like really important to me, just to see if like Conte's like changed like the players, if not us.
Well, you know, it's like we were saying too, I mean, it is a little bit of a switch now, like Arsenal losing and us winning in such sort of stylish fashion has, I think, a lot of people now think Spurs are in the box seat. You could sort of make a case for it kind of being in Tottenham's hands now, like Arsenal have a game in hand on us, but that would only put them three ahead. Our goal difference is +5. We've got to play them at ours. So, you know, if we win all of our games and they win all their games bar us, that would put us level on points, you know, and it's whoever's got the best goal difference. So, you know, it is the first time really for a long, long time where Spurs are the ones sort of with something to lose, I guess, in terms of the top four race. So it will be a massive, massive test to see if they can handle that pressure. Also, it's one of the few occasions, like Ash pointed out, where that Arsenal play first, we go after them. So Arsenal could, you know, have a really good result against Brighton, it's all happy days, and they go back above us. Or, you know, they might, like Billy sort of maybe thinks, Arsenal could stumble against Brighton and get some sort of terrible 0-0, and we might have a really big opportunity to sort of press on. But, yeah, Billy, how are you feeling? You're feeling confident, eh?
Yeah, definitely. And I just want to shout out friend and family member of the show, Ollie, because like before the Arsenal game against Palace, he tweeted that he thinks Palace are going to win. Before the Newcastle game, he tweeted that we're going to absolutely thrash them. And I know he's getting a bit of pushback from that from people. So I just want to say, be more like Ollie, people. We're going to do this. Be more like Ollie.
Rosa, thoughts on that?
I can't believe you said that. Like... Yeah, you don't have to live with him. No, I will. Yeah, he's been super humble about all of that, as you can imagine.
I imagine really, like, it's been really easy to take that as well, seeing as you've been locked in a COVID prison all week with each other.
The good thing about it is that, like, he's right, but it's like, oh no, I feel so stupid. My team won and the team I hate lost. Oh.
It's one of the few occasions where it's absolutely fine. You're right.
Yeah. It's actually fine.
Let's talk a little bit about Spurs women. We don't want to dwell too much because it was quite a bleak weekend for them. They'd had the two postponed games because of COVID. We were playing Villa, funnily enough, who... I think we're in ninth or something. We're still fifth. We're at home and we lost 1-0, Rosa.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. They're in ninth. I was really surprised by it, to be honest. I think this is just, you know, honestly, it's just a warning, isn't it, to us all, because I've been feeling pretty confident going into that game and didn't even worry about it, really. And then Villa, and then it was 0-0 for so long, and I thought, it's fine, you know, we'll get a goal from somewhere, or maybe it'll be a draw. And then they scored in the 87th minute, and it just felt really deflating. I don't, you know, it's not bleak, it's just disappointing, isn't it? And it just sort of looking at the table now is a bit sad, and there's only, what, like three more games left or something, and most of those two, were against Chelsea.
Yeah, literally, there's the international break now, and then they come back off that and have to face Chelsea twice in a week, which feels like
it's really horrible.
Just inhumane and shouldn't be allowed to have to play the best team in Europe, pretty much. I mean, I feel like we've said it every week for months now, like it's just the goals, isn't it? Like just can't summon goals from enough consistent places. I mean, namely the strikers, that we just don't seem to have that reliable forward that can put it in the back of the net sort of every other game even. But
yeah, that's life.
We're still fifth. Yeah. I think what we are excited about is the final home game being at our stadium. We're going to that, which is very exciting. My daughter's already very, very excited about it. Yeah, so that's going to be a really lovely event, and I would encourage everyone to go along on the 5th of May.
Yeah, we're all going to go. You're bringing your daughter. I'm bringing my daughters. I think it's just going to be really fun, and whatever happens, we'll just be able to really, really enjoy the atmosphere, I think. So yeah, come everyone. We'll see you there.
Good stuff. Right, let's move on to culture. Billy, I'm going to start with you. Give us your culture picks, please, mate.
Right. I just want to preface this by saying we haven't done a podcast for 2 weeks, so I'm about to reel off a whole host of things that I've been watching and listening to lately. Right, so I've watched a couple of decent TV shows that I finished, the show Peaky Blinders finished, which I thought was mostly disappointing. The series was really quite poor, but the finale was really good, and it just about sort of made up for how poor the series was. And that's the last ever episode of that, so that's done. I'm currently on the new series of Top Boy, which I'm really, really enjoying. I think it's as good as it ever has been, to be honest. I'm really enjoying that. I watched a really good film called Red Rocket from a director called Sean Baker, who is on an amazing run of films at the moment. He did The Florida Project and Tangerine, which are two really good films. And this one is like a hat trick of, you know, an incredible run. That's really worth checking out. It's about like a male porn star. But it kind of follows his life, and it's really, really interesting the way it kind of makes you quite like this guy, this main character, this male porn star, but you actually sort of by the end of the film you realize that he's like a horrible toxic person. It kind of plays like the morality of it. It's really well worth checking out, Red Rocket. And I also listened to the new Dance System album. It was an alias of Elvis 1990, used to run Night Slug label a few years ago. It's called In Your System. It's his debut album. That is like an incredible album, so I'd highly recommend that. That would be my main pick, actually, Dance System album. And it kind of sounds like Homework by Daft Punk. It's kind of like a 2022 version of Daft Punk, which is always going to be a good thing. But I also wanted to, just because I know it's been a while since me and Rosa have had a little chat about Marvel on this podcast, which some of you will be disappointed in, some of you will be overjoyed at, but Moon Knight debuted last Wednesday, and I absolutely loved it. Rosa, what did you think of Moon Knight?
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. The thing that really made me laugh, because I don't know if it was mostly Americans complaining about Oscar Isaac's English accent, but I thought it was completely fine. I don't know about, like, you thought it was fine as well, right?
Yeah, like I think not happened. Like, the trailer made it seem worse than it was, I think, maybe. Mm. Like, from the trailer, I thought, oh, this is going to be a bit of a problem, this accent. But in this show, yeah, barely even noticed it, to be honest. It was like a spot on English accent.
Yeah, the only thing that did make me laugh is the writing for all the characters is very much like they've got to say like bloody every other word, just so you're just like super aware that they're like British. So that really cracked me up. And it's also really amusing watching Oscar Isaac try to kind of like squish his sort of natural charisma and energy by playing like this sad sack. It works because he's a really good actor, but you can see it's just taken such an effort. But I really, really enjoyed it. And I think it's nice because it is that sort of, it's a completely new thing and it's not like directly connected to any of the other show or movies. So, which is quite refreshing in a way, right? You don't have to watch everything else. It's just a nice, fun thing. And if you were like kind of a dork about ancient Egypt when you were in primary school, like I was, that's also a fun vibe as well. And to be honest, it's always good to just look at Oscar Isaac for half an hour or so. No complaints here.
Exactly, man. And I think it's such a good showcase for Oscar Isaac. I was listening to the Empire podcast. They were talking about the director, interview the director, and he said the scenes where he's talking to himself in the mirror. And if you don't know about the show, he's got two different characters. He's playing two split personalities at once is all like one take. So it's not like cutting between two takes there. He's actually doing that in the moment, which is pretty fucking amazing, really. Like, it's such a good performance from Oscar Isaac. And those mirror scenes are all shot in real time, which is insane when you see those.
Really? God, he's such a good actor. And also, like, shout out to Ethan Hawke as well, who has always been, I think, quite an underrated actor. And it's really, really nice to kind of just to see him just sort of like do whatever he wants to do now, I guess, in this kind of late phase of his career. Like, he doesn't have to be like a sort of like annoying pretty boy. He can just do whatever. And he's so good in it.
Yeah. Is it like, was the knock on him that he was a sort of a bit of a shagger that wasn't that kind of, I don't know.
I don't think he was good to Uma.
I don't think
he was a great husband by all accounts, but you know, he's an actor, so really.
Fair enough. We should step off that before we get done for libel. Ash, your picks, please.
Yeah, so I've been listening to like loads of albums. There's like a Jay Worthy Larry June album, which is great. There's a Rema album, there's a J. Cole mixtape. But there's a new album from Denzel Curry, who's like a rapper. I think he's from Florida. And the album's called Melt My Eyes, See Your Future. And Robert Glasper's on there. T-Pain is on there. Slow Tie's on there. And it's just really brilliant. It's like a step in a new direction for him. And I really recommend it. It's great.
My music gets, my kind of weekly playlist just gets such an enhancement anytime Ash recommends anything. Always super grateful. Ash, thank you very much. Rosa, you've been poorly, obviously, as have your entire household. Have you been able to seek comfort in culture this week at all?
No, I've done absolutely nothing. I've just been, because my whole family has been sick, so I've just basically gone to bed at 8 o'clock every night, and in the daytime I just watched children's telly. So we have managed to watch Turning Red, so that is one thing I can do. And we have listened to the soundtrack a few times, and you're so right, Charlie, like, I can't get over how good those songs are. They're just unbelievable. Perfect.
They're just so well observed, aren't they? Like, you can't believe that they're not from that time.
Yeah, they just, it's, but also you can sort of hear that kind of Billie Eilish like vibe, yeah. Kind of, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Which just basically makes them perfect.
They're just, yeah, tremendous. Yeah, Turning Red just has not come off our television for like 3 weeks now. It's so good that I'd recommend it to anyone. Well, Rosa, we wish you guys better very soon. My ones very quickly, a couple of TV shows. The Dropout on Disney Plus, which is about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, is really, really, really good. I thought it was going to be a bit cheesy, but Amanda Seyfried is superb playing sort of what could have been a bit of a cartoon character. Would definitely, definitely recommend that. The Split has just started its final season on the BBC, so looking forward to watching that. And on a music tip, Kelly Lee Owens, who's one of my favourites, has got new music coming soon, and been lucky enough to hear quite a bit of it, and it's so, so good. And she's incredible, just sort of our usual bigging up sort of women in electronica tip that we have on this podcast. I think this is potentially going to sort of take her to a new level. She's always good, but this is fantastic. Right, I reckon we should wrap it up there. We've been talking away for what feels like minutes, but I know it's probably hours for people that have maybe listened the entire time. Rosa, thank you. Ash, thank you. Billy, thank you very much. This has been a joy because Spurs are playing really well. And I love talking to you guys as always. Thank you ever so much. Billy, see you soon.
Up the Eagles, up the Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.